Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name is Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. There's a new Tesla in town, the Cybertruck. Announced at SpaceX headquarters in LA, the company describes the Cybertruck as an electric pickup. But it looks nothing like one. Instead, it resembles something out of a sci-fi movie more suited to be on Mars than driving around the roads on Earth. Apocalypse editor Chris Hall has followed the announcements and discussions afterwards and joins me to tell me more. Meanwhile, following my stint as a judge on the James Dyson Awards earlier in the year, I caught up with Lucy Hughes, the student who's not only won the UK leg, but also the overall global prize of £30,000 with her invention of a new bioplastic made of organic fish waste. We talk about what it means for her and her new material. And keeping in with the eco-friendly car theme this week, Apocalypse Reviews editor Mike Lowe walks us through the new all-electric Ford Mustang Mach-E, which he's checked out in Oslo at the European launch. Does it have what it takes to be a Mustang? But first, let's go back to you, Chris. Tell us more about the Tesla pickup.
Well, I don't know whether to laugh or cry, really. The Tesla pickup,
that's one way of doing it.
The Tesla pickup is dramatic in its design, to say the least. It looks like a giant metal wedge on wheels. There isn't a curve anywhere. It's all apart from the wheels. There are just angles all over the place, big sloping front, big angles coming down to the back. Calling it a Cybertruck is very accurate. It looks like the sort of thing that car companies put out as a concept, but Tesla seems to have gone out and made this into their final production version. I can see why people are talking about it, and maybe that was the aim. Instead of making just an electric pickup, Tesla has decided to do something that is utterly and bizarrely unique.
I mean, it's incredibly polarizing in its design, isn't it? As you say, it looks like a triangle on wheels. Incredibly sci-fi, a bit DeLorean, maybe.
Yes, Tesla have made it out of steel panels here, and I think they've done that for the strength, just to design this pickup truck in a more rugged way than a lot of the other cars that are on the road. It's strange to look at from the front because it is just a huge triangle, but the back of it does open up like a pickup. So while you have a cab up the front where you'll have drivers and passengers with lots of space, there is that huge cargo area at the back. And some of Tesla's promo shots have seen a sort of four-wheel ATV loaded onto the back. And also what looks like a tent conversion in case you wanted to take this thing camping.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
Why wouldn't you? There are some technical details that have been released. Tesla said that they're going to be doing three different versions of this, which very much mirror some of the different versions they have on their other cars. So there will be a single motor rear-wheel drive version. Then there'll be the dual motor, which will be the all-wheel drive version, which I suspect will be the most popular because if you're buying a pickup, you're going to need all the wheels working. And finally, there will be a triple motor version. And the triple motor is something that Tesla has been playing around with for a while. And this is going to be the most powerful and the most expensive and have the longest range. The other important thing about pickups is they're often designed to tow. And Tesla's been quite upfront about how much towing power you will have as well. This is obviously, pickup trucks are huge for the US. They're less popular in other parts of the world. But I have just been on the UK Tesla site and you can put down it's not really a pre-order because it's only £100 deposit, which is fully refundable. It looks like it's going to be available everywhere.
That's something very similar that it is with the Model 3, wasn't it? But that was £1,000 to really sort of suggest that you had to be serious about this. Again, you got your full deposit back if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the interesting thing for me here is the range. I mean, that top of the line one is 500 miles. I mean, that's a long way.
That is a long way. And a lot of people using pickups aren't using them to go on a holiday. They're not driving all the way across the country. A lot of them are used to move things around nearby places. So, you know, that 500 range is huge, and that will be a big step forward, but it's also a big vehicle to be able to pack this into. I suspect that there will be a Model X that then has triple motor arrangement and have 500 mile range in the future as well. The other interesting thing was that as soon as this was launched, a debate then started about whether electric cars were better for the environment or not. And this has been rolling on. A lot of it came out of a comment that appeared in The Guardian over the weekend, which was an opinion piece written by a German chap. And he said that they may not be as green as you think they are because of the energy and the carbon cost of creating the vehicle in the first place. This guy, Hans-Werner Sinn, wrote this opinion piece in The Guardian. And one of the small details that he mentioned was that his calculations were based on the German power mix. And really what this means is that Germany is heavily reliant on coal still. So if you're manufacturing and the electricity that you get is going to be sourced from coal, then you may be better off and have a lower carbon output if you bought a traditional diesel. Lots of people have been upset about this, and it's really sort of like stoked the fire, if you will, around electric vehicles. Because I mean, for example, in the UK, we have now moved a lot of our energy mix over to wind instead. And there have been days where our coal power stations have been completely offline, which means the electricity that everybody's using, including in manufacturing, is then a lot cleaner. So,
and I suppose the argument from Tesla as well is that they have the Tesla Powerwall, which is that big battery that you can stick on the side. You can put solar panels on, you know, you could go off grid completely. You know, that's one of the joys of something like this, is you could charge, you have solar panels on your roof, that powers your battery, which then powers your car, which means you're not, it's completely eco. But yeah, I mean, there's always been that argument. I mean, I always remember the Prius was, you know, people saying about the Prius when that first came out, that wasn't eco-friendly because of the manufacturing process to do that, compared to a like Land Rover Defender, which everybody, you know, is not even allowed on the roads anymore because it's doesn't pass, you know, they can't make any new ones because it doesn't park those ecological.
That's right. So yeah, I think this is a debate that's set to rage for quite a long time, but the Cybertruck it definitely wins points for being eye-catching. It's doing exactly what Elon Musk is really good at, which is selling Tesla as an exciting brand.
Now, do you think, I mean, the rumors are, or the suggestion is that they've got 200,000 pre-orders. When you look at that 100,000, you know, £100 deposit, it's pretty easy just to say, oh yeah, I'll put my name down and then not actually go through with it. Do you think we will see these on the roads in droves?
I suspect that they will be much more popular in the US because they're attracted to the pickup market. In the UK, I suspect that the people who buy them will buy them because it is so different. And I think that like some of the other Tesla models, it will have something of a cult status because it's a Tesla and because it looks so strange. There'll be lots of people who say that is revolting, it should not be allowed on the road. And there will be other people who absolutely love it and buy it because it's so incredibly different.
Still to come, Mike gives us his opinion on the new Ford Mustang.
It's quite different. So Mustang is world famous, right? It's known very much for being the American muscle car. And the new Mach-E is kind of not that.
Frustrated by the pointless use of single-use plastic, did you know the average bag is used for only about 10 minutes? Lucy Hughes challenged herself to find a sustainable alternative derived from an existing waste stream. In this case, fish offcuts. The University of Sussex graduate won the UK James Dyson Award back in the summer and has gone on to win the global prize, netting herself around £30,000 to invest in her idea to take it to the next stage. I caught up with Lucy and started by asking her how it felt to win the overall prize this year.
Oh, it's like, I couldn't believe it, honestly. Like, it's a huge injection into kind of my project and with the risk of sounding cheesy, it's changed my life for sure.
And let's go back to the beginning, just for people that aren't aware of what the product or the innovation was that you won for. So can you tell us a bit about Marina Tech and like really where the inspiration came from?
Sure. So Marina Tech is a biodegradable and home compostable material made from waste from the fishing industry and red algae. And my project began with the kind of notion that I wanted to work with the waste stream, and I wanted to work with waste. So through a university lecturer, I then got in contact with a fish processing plant and went down there. So they're based in New Haven, which is just east of Brighton. And I went down there and kind of had a tour of their plant, and had the glamorous job of kind of sifting through bloods and guts and scales. and it was ultimately the skins and the scales that kind of captured my imagination. And so it then went on from there. So after that, I was kind of researching the materials and kind of working out what kind of was locked up in there and what the composition was. And then it was a case of finding a binder. And at the moment, that fish waste is shipped all the way up to Grimsby, which is the north of England, to be then turned into fish meal. So I was looking for kind of a way to make local solutions to do with that, to do stuff with that fish waste. So when I was looking for a binder, because obviously like I had all this organic material, and then I needed a binder. So when I was looking for binders, I looked towards the sea, and that's where I kind of came across red algae and its kind of binding qualities. And then it was experimentation.
And so, like, was there, you know, lots of, when you talk to scientists or people that invent things or things like that, there's kind of, they always talk about this eureka moment, you know, they jumping out of the bath, running through the town. Was there a moment for you like that where you suddenly thought, hang on a minute, this is like, I'm onto something here, this is going to work?
I'm no Archimedes, but I do think that there was, so when I was playing around with the skins and scales, and I had ground up fish scales and mixed it with the algae binder. And it originally, the kind of my material without the skins and the scales, or almost tried to revert back into seaweed shape. So it kind of crinkled up, and it was, in terms of kind of thinking about the future and thinking about manufacturing that as a material, the lack of consistency was a real issue. So when I had kind of just very roughly kind of ground up the scales and mixed it with the algae, it came out kind of super flat. And it was that moment where I was like, wait a minute, there's something here.
And so how like the journey so far, how long has this taken to get to this point where you had that idea of, right, I'm going to turn fish waste into effectively plastic bags, you know, for lack of a better word. How long has that taken? Has it been a really quick process, or have you, you know, in the back of your mind, you've been working on this since you were like 12?
it's relatively quick. So this was for my final year project, and it was roughly about this time last year that I went to MCB Seafoods, the fish processing plant, to kind of explore their waste streams. So it's been a very quick, especially in terms of like material development, to get to this point. However, I do think that there's a lot more research and development that needs to go into this material to kind of get it to market. So it's a hard one for me to predict as well, because obviously you really can't predict the outcomes of R&D. But it's been quick so far, and that's just because of the nature of it being a final year project and kind of having to hit deadlines.
And so you've effectively got a proof of concept product. It exists. It can be used. How long do you think it will be before, you know, I'm seeing Marina Tech in the high street, you know, in the real world?
Such a hard question to answer. I wish I could give you a timeline of exactly when it would be. But as I say, because it behaves completely different to plastic, it's not plastic at all. It's completely new material. To get it into production, I need completely new infrastructure. And I don't think, so for example, that plastic bag machine, because this isn't plastic, I can't just feed it into existing plastic bag machines, which then extrude it. I would need to develop those machines myself. So that in itself is kind of a huge challenge, but it is a relatively low low tech process. Obviously, I did this in my kitchen. So it shouldn't be too complicated. It's just something that will probably take time. I would love to see it in the next 2 to 3 years. But yeah, try my best.
And what are your hopes for the material? Is it to replace everything that we currently use single use plastics for, or is it bigger than that, or is it, you know, not so big?
So I always encourage refuse and reuse before anything else. So even though that the images and the kind of initial applications that I've shown that Marina Tech could be used in, so like plastic bags and bakery bags and stuff, I'm not sure if, I mean, plastic bags, for example, I would champion trying to bring your own to any shop rather than kind of getting a new one. However, there are certain places, like, for example, like in the fashion industry, each garment is individually wrapped in a plastic film, so that when they get to the warehouse, the warehouse workers can see what's inside of each garment. They have to all be protected. So that's, and if you think about the amount of fashion and the amount of clothing that we consume, that's a huge place where I could see a relatively low tech place for marine techs to be used in.
And obviously winning the Dyson Award is a great accolade, and congratulations on that. How important is that award to you? And do you think that's, you know, is that just one accolade on the journey, or is this kind of a real game changer?
Well, I mean, it's already been a complete game changer. The kind of the response I've got has been so positive, and people, because I think it's also because people are so aware of the issues now, and also the news has been pretty dire recently. I've got a lot of responses of people being like, I want to help in any way I can. So I've really been feeling the startup love from many people. So I think this has been a huge game changer. And I hope that it's one accolade in many to come, but even if it isn't, it's been incredible.
And in terms of, one of the questions I was going to ask is what's next, but I presume what's next is spending more time developing and building this project. And I presume the prize money from James Dyson will go towards that development.
Yeah, absolutely. Next steps, I kind of have short-term goals and I have long-term goals. Short-term goals are to gain protection, get this into production, continue R&D. And then kind of long-term goals are to sort of spread the message of kind of the circular economy and educate consumers and also manufacturers in kind of different kinds of materials and also different ways that we can tackle this kind of environmental issue of plastic consumption. But I'm at the bottom of my mountain. But
and I suppose, you know, it's that, I suppose, that fascinating thing of, you know, fresh out of university, you've now effectively got the next 5 to 10 years mapped out for you if you're going to focus on Marina Tech. You know, and that's, is, how does that feel? Is that an exciting prospect, or is it sort of quite daunting?
So it's a bit of both. I think obviously it's exciting because, I mean, who gets this opportunity? Like, I feel extremely lucky to have been in, to be put in this position of, kind of, you know, so many opportunities have been presented to me. And it's not, yeah, it's not your average graduate experience. also it's, yeah, it is really daunting because, I've never done this before. And, I've spent 3 to 4 years learning product design, and now I'm going to be spending the next umpteen amount of years, doing startup and also like a tech startup as well, a biotech startup. So, and I've never done that before. So, it is daunting.
For the first time in 55 years, Ford is expanding the Mustang line with the introduction of the Mach-E, the company's first all-electric vehicle. Mike Lowe, Pocalint's reviews editor, was at the European launch in Oslo, Norway, to get a closer look at the next step in Mustang history. Can it take on other EVs in the market already? And more importantly, with Mustang so famous for its brawn and power, how can an electric version deliver the same punch? So, Mike, what's it like?
It's quite different. So Mustang is world famous, right? It's known very much for being the American muscle car. And the new Marquee is kind of not that. It's a new form. It's taking on an SUV kind of styling, because obviously that's the market that is currently most successful, that people are buying into. So it's really Ford completely expanding its horizons, not only making its first all-electric car, but pushing into a different market using a famous name that it has. And I think it's going to ruffle a few feathers. I think there's some people who are going to love it and others who will find it a bit of a end of an era because the styling is quite different.
And so let's start with the negatives before we move on to the positive. What didn't you like about it?
So I quite like it. I just think because it's such a institution, people love Mustang and they love that kind of big-shouldered kind of American muscle car look. It's classic and it always has been. And this obviously is a different kind of car. It's got longer wheelbase. It's, you know, SUV styled. In a way, it looks a little bit like the Maserati Levante. It's just a different looking thing. And that is going to upset some of the diehard fans, I suspect.
And you've kind of alluded to some of these good points. Obviously, looking at the pictures that you've taken on Pocket Lens, you know, that horse front and center, you know, the Mustang badge on the front. What do you like about it?
My point of view, I think, is not entirely exterior. It's about what Ford's doing inside, because for quite a long time, this company's kind of lagged behind a bit. And when I sat in this, it's kind of really stepped things up compared to where they've been at. With these have like tiny screens and nothing was particularly technological, but this guy has a massive like central screen in the middle, which I think is 15 and a half inches, which is kind of similar to what Tesla has been doing for a while, because Teslas are known for having this big 17 inch screen in the center that's all touch screen and you handle everything in that kind of format. And that's just like a massive leap forward in what Ford is doing. But also when you're sat in the car, it dominates, you know. It's got a really different feeling about it. It's like this big floating kind of screen. In addition, behind the wheel, they've got like a 10-inch driver display, so everything there is digital as well. I think it's sort of laying down the footing for what is to come from Ford and showing that they can now finally compete in that area as well.
And in terms of performance, do you think it's got what it takes to be a Mustang?
We'll see. You know, it's a 0-60 in about 5 seconds. No one's driven it except for the guys at Ford, because there aren't very many of them. This was a hand-built one that they'd exported, and only one person was allowed to drive it. So they were very cautious about anyone making any damage to it, because it's probably one of the only ones in Europe, if not the only one.
Now, this comes into quite what's fast becoming quite a crowded market. It kind of hits above the, you know, it's kind of tacking onto the, would you say, the Jaguar I-Pace kind of level, but not as expensive?
Yeah, all those things. I mean, right now, the car market is very much pushing into SUVs, crossovers, and electric vehicles, be they be all electric or plug-in or, you know, have a self-regen motor that's in there. Self-regenerating battery that's in there. All this stuff is kind of coming to the fore, and every company worth its salt has to do something about it. You know, that's where the market's going. They need to push in that direction. Ford has come in at a pretty reasonable price point. I mean, it's not cheap, but we're talking, you know, upwards of £40,000. But then when you're looking at where, say, Tesla started, that was, you know, six figures almost in many cases. And the Jag is pricey, but the Jag's probably got that kind of more premium edge. It's probably a bit, you know, more sporty styled and so on. So there's a lot more choice out there. And right to the other side, you've got the Audi e-tron, which is kind of a bigger SUV, like full-on SUV, that again is also more expensive. So we'll see what the level of interest is, because I think people are going to kind of react to that price point.
And so if I was a listener now thinking, this still sounds interesting, should I get one? Do you think the final verdict at the moment? I know you haven't driven it, but from a design sort of comfort, aesthetics, cockpit kind of look and feel, is it something that you should put on your wish list, or is it a maybe not this time?
It's definitely a great looking car. If it drives well, then I can't see any reason to not put it on your short list for sure. Whether it goes against your kind of opinion of what Mustang should be, that's a whole other issue. So I think that's going to be part of the dividing line. There's one other thing I've got to talk about because I almost forgot. It's got this kind of crazy door system. So if you look at the photos, it doesn't have any door handles.
None at all.
No, it's got these little buttons. And basically you press one and it kind of, on the inside of the door, it just pushes out this little kind of lever thing that pushes the door away by a few centimeters, and then you can get your hand around the side and pull it out. So it gives it this really kind of sleek design look. We haven't spoken much about the exterior. But on the driver's door, in the column on the door, it's got a number pad, as if you were going into some sort of secure area, and you can set a key code to get into the car, which is something I've never seen anywhere, and is kind of pretty cool and pretty futuristic, unless it breaks, I suppose.
Yeah. But I think that's something, we're seeing this quite a bit. The Jag has receptive door handles. Tesla Model 3 has those weird ones that you kind of, they're on a lever system, yeah. And the idea of not needing keys anymore is quite appealing, I think.
And that's a thing that they're also introducing. I know there's a few things need to be signed off by different bodies before that'll be possible with this car in the UK, but come 2020 when it's out, you should also be able to have your phone provide keyless entry to this as well.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's that clearly must be the way that we're all going, either your watch, smartwatch controlling it, Fitbit or whatever, letting you get into the car or
you use the numbered
keypad. Or a numbered keypad. I mean, that's even better. You could probably see that working really well for those kind of Zipcar people where you just have to type in a number to get into the car and off you go. So it's not even your car.
You never know. You might see more of these on the road than you may expect. I think that's the thing. They've kind of hit all the right points. It's whether or not the classic horse badge is going to be accepted by the hardcore.
Now, just to finally, this is not out next week.
No, not at all. You can pre-order it. You can put your deposit down. It comes in all manner of configurations. So basically, you can have the standard rear-wheel drive. There's a second version, which has an all-wheel drive platform. And there's also a first edition, which I believe just comes in a fancy paint of coat. a fancy coat of paint. Get my words right. And has kind of all the extras in there. So it's got all the additional tech packs.
And when does that all arrive if everything goes to plan?
I believe it'll be the end of 2020. Mm. So it's quite a long wait. A little bit behind some of the competition perhaps, but I think they want to make sure they've got it right and roll out the numbers as soon as they can.
That's it for this week. If you've enjoyed the show, can you please give us a 5-star rating on the podcast platform you're listening on? It really will help raise our profile and let others know you liked it too. Until next Friday, pip pip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.